into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Now, very happy to welcome our next guest who's promoting a brilliant initiative. So he's a Red Bull athlete and he's a Wings for Life World Run Ambassador. I'm talking about Thomas Barr. So basically, runners from beginner to elite are being encouraged to sign up to the 2021 app run event via the app or at wingsforlifeworldrun.com. So essentially, 100% of the €20 entry fee going straight to spinal cord research. This year's event takes place on Sunday, the 9th of May. Participants worldwide, all starts at 12 p.m. Irish time. Thomas Barr, you're very welcome. How are you doing?
Thank you very much. Yeah, very good, very good. It's sunny outside, so it's hard to be in a bad form when it's when we get that rare bit of sunshine.
I'm sure. You're down in Limerick, as I understand it. Am I right in saying you're renovating a 1950s cottage over the last while? Is that what's going on in your world?
You are absolutely correct. You've been doing your research. Yeah, I am indeed. It's been my distraction for my lockdown project, if you like, as well as training away full time.
Good man. How's it going? Are you handy?
I like to think so. Anyway, like my dad has always been massive into DIY. Been very hands on with any DIY projects. So I'm kind of trying to follow in his footsteps, learn from him, and learning a bit from the internet as I go. So it's a nice distraction. It is a very nice distraction, in fairness.
YouTube's a savior at these moments.
Yeah, I have a YouTube degree in a lot of different things at the moment, but they don't count for much, unfortunately.
Why Limerick? Why is that where you've settled down?
I came to college here initially in 2010. And I've kind of stayed here ever since. I joined the training group with my coaches, Haley and Drew. Athletics was kind of on the back burner then, really. It wasn't something I ever saw really going anywhere. It was more of a hobby and a pastime than a career choice. But once I joined Haley and Drew's group, they kind of brought me on to world-class level over my first couple of years. And that's why I've kind of set up camp here for the foreseeable, because it's where I'm based for work, essentially, for training.
Yeah. What age did you cross that line from promising or good or better than average to world-class?
Probably when I was about 18, 19. I was a decent athlete at an underage level nationally.
Decent mean you're winning national titles or not even that decent?
Oh. No, not that close. Not that close. Like I was probably 4 or 5 seconds behind. There was an athlete, Patrick Maher, at the time who was kind of leading the charge in my event, and I was about 4 or 5 seconds behind him. So while he was crossing the finish line, usually I was crossing over the last hurdle. So
four or five seconds back. Is an ocean at 400 meters, isn't it?
Massive. You're looking at 40, 50 meters. So that was kind of where I was at when I moved to the group in Limerick. And then, you know, I trained away. I wasn't really sure was athletics going to be for me. I contemplated giving up the sport, but my parents were kind of very encouraging and said, look, give it a go for a year under your new coaches. Like Jessie, my sister, had moved to Haley and Drew and she really flourished under them. And they said, give it a go. You saw what it did for Jessie. So I did. And that year I shaved 6 seconds off my personal best in the hurdles and made it to my first European junior championships and ended up finishing sixth. So that was really my turning point when I was about 18, 19 and moved up the ranks then year on year to all the way up to Olympic level.
That's some jump. You mustn't have been training brilliantly as a 17-year-old, if you don't mind me saying.
Yeah, I think I was training hard, but just training ineffectively, if you like.
I'll bet.
Like the hurdle is a very, very technical event. So to get everything right is tough. That was what I was lacking, I suppose.
I wanted to ask you about that actually. So the hurdles, technique versus speed. I presume it doesn't naturally follow that the fastest guy on the track will then win over hurdles by any means.
There is a good correlation to being fast on the track and also being fast over the hurdles, but that's provided you have an efficient or a good hurdling technique. If you're a fast 400 meter hurdler, you're probably going to be fast on the flat. But if you're a fast 400 meter runner with no hurdling technique or rhythm, you're not going to be fast over 400 meter hurdles. So it's a highly, highly technical event because if you aren't able to slot those hurdles in to a decent stride pattern, so say for me, I run 13 strides to hurdle 6 or 7, then 14 strides home, because that's where it comes naturally to me. If I have to stutter at all or reach for a hurdle, you're losing speed immediately. And you can lose quite a lot on one hurdle gap. You know, you can really win or lose a race on one hurdle, which is why I love the sport, because there's so many technical aspects, as well as just being fast or being having good speed endurance or being strong. The technical side of things is where you can really make or break a race. And while there's a lot of areas to lose speed, there's also a lot of areas to gain, which is probably why I've kind of come up the ranks. Because while I might not be the fastest on the flat, I'm technically quite a good hurdler. So that's what's really brought me on. And that's what Haley has really brought on in me, yeah.
Right. That explains maybe the leap, and no pun intended, from when you were trying on your own and then working with them technically. So in terms of precision, I presume it is quite precise. Like, you wouldn't wake up on a different side of the bed of a morning and suddenly be taking an extra stride or two. That would be very, very unusual. What is the gaps would be never that big, or could you?
Well, like, initially I probably did 15 strides and then I did 14. I tried with 14 strides, but as soon as you're doing 14 strides, you have to take a hurdle alternatively on your left leg, right leg, left leg, right leg, left leg, right leg. So you're obviously going to have a favorite or a preferred leg, which for me is my left. So if I was able to go on 13 strides, it meant that I was taking less strides for the race, but I was also getting each hurdle on my left leg. So it was more preferable for me. It was quicker for me to do that. And there's even one of the guys, Jack Mitchell, who I'm training with now, has made the move from 15 strides down to 14 strides, and it looks so much better and more efficient. So it's really about slotting in that. So yeah, like you said, it doesn't happen overnight. It does take a lot of physically, you need to be fast, you need to be strong, but as well mentally, you need to be really, really brave to throw yourself at that hurdle from a further distance than you're used to, or, you know, start to attack it a little bit more, which is it can be very, very daunting initially, but then once it becomes a habit, it makes such a big difference to the race.
Yes, that's fascinating. And would it, so, because I guess the reason I was asking about the volatility as well, doing it on a Tuesday morning when it's cold down in Limerick versus doing it in a full stadium with adrenaline, you could find, my God, I'm needing less steps here. Like, all of that stuff could come into play.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because obviously, yeah, like you say, if I was to go down there now to the track in UL and go and try and run a hurdles race, I'm going to be probably reaching for the hurdles. And as well, you have to take into account the wind. The wind can push you onto the hurdles quickly, or it can push you off the hurdles. So that all has an effect. And if I often look back on my race, well, not often, but sometimes I will look back on my race from Rio, and in the first maybe 4 hurdles, I'm stuttering because I'm being pushed up onto the hurdles because I'm moving so fast. And then from, say, hurdle 4 to hurdle 6, which is from about 150 meters in to about 180 to 200 or to 220 to 250 meters in, I'm in my kind of, you know, comfortable zone, and then I'm starting to have to reach for them, and that's when I need to slot in a 14 strides. So it's kind of a lot of that thinking is really done on the fly, and that kind of comes with experience as to knowing where and when to chop and change strides and where you need to take a little bit off. It might only be, because you're looking at 13 strides over a 35 meter gap, it might only be a couple of centimeters each stride that you need to either add on or take away, but they make a big difference then when it comes to the next hurdle and the next gap and pushing all the way through the race. So yeah, you have the technical side of it, things fairly nailed there, Joe.
Oh, it's amazing. God, you got to stay calm out there if you're not in your pattern.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's very much so. I always find that I will run my best races when I'm calm, relaxed, feel like I have all the hard work done, and I'm ready just to go out there and take it on. I feel like, you know, like, I'll often use visualization before a race, and I'll go through every iteration of where I am in the pack, say in the race. What happens if it's windy down the back straight? What happens if, you know, if I go through all of that in my head beforehand to try and take out any of that before the race.
And so if you feel you're falling behind slightly in the race, you have to resist the temptation to try and push that little bit harder because it might knock you out of sync? Or can you allow yourself to go full bore because I just need to go hell for leather here, I have nothing to lose? How does that work?
Yeah, I think 400 meter hurdles is one of those races where you really do have to run your own race. Okay. And you have to nearly put the blinkers on and ignore what everyone else is doing.
Okay.
Like, it can help to have other athletes in the race to give you a gauge of how fast you're going compared to them. And it can give you an idea of, do you need to kick on a little bit? Because it can be very difficult to pace a race sometimes, not knowing what shape you're in or where you're at. And it can be difficult to judge that. So it's nice to have that. But you really do have to resist that temptation to tighten up, knuckle down and try and, you know, put in a lot of effort, because as soon as you do that, you're going to become quite inefficient and you're just wasting energy. So it's a lot of the time with 400 hurdles, it's about putting the blinkers on and focusing on what you're doing yourself, really.
Right. Man, 400 meters, it's the worst distance. It's just so painful. It's so
you're
painful.
Telling me.
Oh my God. Why? What kind of sadistic quality do you have? I mean, you're sprinting, but you're not sprinting. It never ends. Ugh, the lactic acid. Because it's not possible. It's not possible for the human body to run at the pace you're all going at and not be in ribbons by the end.
Yeah, like lactic acid, you're in that 50 second zone, 40 to 50 second zone is where your body generates the most amount of lactic acid. So as soon as you're coming down the home straight, there's a technical term. It's a very technical term called the lactic sniper, which you'll often see athletes get hit with down on the home straight, where it literally looks like their legs are about to fall off coming down the home straight. And that is a very, very real feeling where your legs are heavy. It's like trying to run with lead weights attached, or a load of water balloons attached to your legs. It's such a weird feeling where you're trying, and it feels like you're trying to get to the finish line, and you feel like it's just getting further and further away because you're just not able to lift your legs up, and it's a horrible feeling. But yeah, it's what we have to train for. I'd say if there's any of the lads in my training group are listening to this now, or will be listening to this, they're probably going to be shouting, because like for some reason I don't feel lactic acid as much as some of the guys in my training group. Now, whether it's not I'm not pushing as hard as them, and I'm not pushing myself, or I'm more efficient in the way I'm running, or if I have that little bit of a higher threshold, I have no idea. But there'll be sessions that they will be in absolute ribbons, and I won't be too bad.
Well, the genetics are obviously good in your family.
Exactly. They
You've
must
got
be.
Something. Yeah.
Thanks, Mum and Dad.
Yeah. That's such a great, the lactic sniper between 40 and 50 seconds. Okay.
Yeah, that's where it starts to kick in.
Mm.
At home straight.
Was the last year tough going mentally, beyond what everyone was going through, I guess? So it's not like you were totally alone and having your life disrupted. I guess injury would have been a far more lonely experience, whereas this was more of a collective thing. But that said, you know, God, I guess around July or August time, you might have been more tempted to put on a pizza and have a few beers and, you know, let things go a bit, you know. How did you find it?
Yeah, like you said, it's been tough on everybody. And I think being stuck inside, being stuck within the 5K, especially this time for this lockdown, it's been so long that it has been tough on everybody. And you can see it's taken a mental toll on everybody.
Yeah.
I do think that, like you said, injury is probably tougher because it's much more lonely. You feel like you're falling behind while everybody else is pushing ahead in training terms. I think, like, personal, on a personal note and personal life, I think it's been the lockdowns have been tough. But as regards athletics, I haven't found it overwhelming or too tough, because we're all in the same boat. We've all been dealt the same hand. Like, I've dealt with injury before where I've been out of the sport and everybody else is racing, but that's not the case this time. So it hasn't been too bad. In all honesty, when they did announce the most annoying thing for me and the most frustrating thing for athletes was not having any goal to work towards. So initially, this time last year, when it was all kicking off and we were trying to train in car parks, we were trying to train, you know, on our own on hills, in greens, and in industrial estates, to try and train at an Olympic standard without Olympic facilities was very difficult. Because we were assuming that there was an Olympics going to go ahead either that summer, or there was talk of it being postponed to the following October, or we didn't know it was going to be postponed the following year. So when the news came that it was actually going to be postponed to 2021 this year, it was actually a bit of a relief because at least we had a goal. So what I did then was, because like I haven't had a summer off in 10 years, my summers have been full on training, competitions. I did throw on that pizza. I did have that beer. I did enjoy a little bit of the summer, you know, because it doesn't happen that often. So I said then, there and then, when the rug was pulled out from underneath us, it wasn't looking like there was going to be that many races that summer. Everything was falling apart. So I kind of just settled back into it. Said, right, this is how it is. We're all going to be stuck inside. May as well make the best of it. The weather was nice at the time, so we had plenty of barbecues. And when things opened up, I'm a bit of a water baby, and so are my friends. So we went out in the lake with boats and had a bit of fun that way.
Great.
When things kind of opened up towards the summer, so I took the couple of weeks off, enjoyed it, and it left me refreshed. Then going back into training, I got the jump start then. Got back into training really early for the 2021 season. So just tried to make the best of a bad situation, really.
And with Olympians, it's always hard to know how it works. And I suspect it works differently the world over. Are the people you're training with every day, are they just like very talented, enthusiastic amateurs who have a certain level? Are they fellow elites? Is it with a coach that you have to pay?
Everything in between. So yeah, like I'm training with, well, at the, like our main training group, when we were all allowed to train together, but and we didn't have all the lockdown restrictions, would have been from a level of people, you know, trying to get into the sport and getting into sprinting, all the way up to international level.
Okay.
At the moment now, because we've had to break up into pods, we've all been broken up as per our kind of training level, really. And I'm now training with, there's a couple of guys who are doing quite well nationally. So I'm training with those, like Colin Crosby and Jack Mitchell now. They're very good training partners of mine who are doing quite well.
And they're really pulling me on. Would you spend a lot of time sprinting 100 meters to get your speed up? Or would you spend more time working on endurance, like running, I don't know, 800 meters more? Or do you just run 400 meters? What's your most common evening of training? What distance are you running?
So we kind of work in every in both the endurance and the speed side of things. So for endurance wise, we're actually kind of at this time of year now coming towards more of the speed side of things. So typically on a Monday will be our speed session, and on a Thursday would a speed endurance session. We do hill training on a Saturday, technical session on a Wednesday. They'd be our main kind of running sessions. So the Monday session typically would be shorter, faster, longer recoveries. The Thursday session would be longer reps, a little bit slower, shorter recoveries to get that endurance side up. And in the winter, that could be like 600. That typical session could be 600, 500, 400, 300, 200, with maybe 4 or 5 minutes between. Now it's coming to much more faster stuff. So it's still on the endurance side of things, but it might be a couple of 300s. With longer recoveries.
Okay.
So you're really pushing out that speed endurance, or it could be what we would call a split 500 or a split 400, where it would be, if it was a split 500, it could be 250 with 30 or 40 seconds between them.
Right.
So you're going as fast as you can for that 250, and then you're replicating it, and that's giving you your effective speed endurance. So we kind of work in all of the, you know, we try and hit as much as we can. We would rarely actually run just a 400 on its own. We'd usually run either on the other side of things where we're running that little bit longer, or we'd run that little bit shorter, but faster.
Yes.
I think it's the mental side of things. You know, if you were to run an all-out 400 and it wasn't that great at training, to be going in with that mentality then into a competition block thinking, I'm not doing so well.
Interesting.
Isn't that good? Whereas it's easier to mentally get prepped for a 300 or something.
That makes sense. Actually, brief tangent for radio listeners. This is obviously on our social channels as well. Over Thomas's shoulder, he's got a shoe collection that Carrie Bradshaw would envy. So in terms of you breaking in shoes or runners, I guess, are you wearing your old moldy ones on Olympic final day that you've worn all year and you like them, or will you open a new pair? What's the perfect length of time you want to be in one of those runners that you're wearing on the biggest day of your life?
So generally, what I'll do is I'll get a, you know, like New Balance will send me a pair of spikes, and I'll wear them for training, get used to them. If I like them, I'll keep wearing those throughout training, and because I'm then used to that plate. And what happens as well is if you're using a spike or a shoe for training, the sole becomes very flexible.
Mm.
And as soon as you put on a new pair, and when it's stiff, you feel like you get that little bit of spring. So okay. I'll often put those on. I'll bring a pair with me when I'm going to a championships, a brand new pair, and I'll stick those on in the week leading into the championships. So the last couple of sessions I do, I'll put those on and I'm going to feel great. You know, real fresh, really, okay. really fresh.
Okay.
And whether it's up here or not, I don't know. But
no, sure. And are the new, so we've done a few bits in the show on like the new Nike show, the new Nike shoes, and like the technology is making a monumental difference to the point where it feels like this is a bit of a line in the sand, you know, the previous generation probably looking on enviously at all the times that are coming in. And we've seen a lot of Irish women run fantastic 400 meters times. So that's in your kind of stratosphere. What's the shoe situation?
I don't know. I can't speak for what everyone else has been running in, but I have New Balance have a version of this kind of new era of running shoe and spike. I think I'm fairly sure they do.
Have you worn it yet?
Not yet. No, not yet.
You want to get that order?
Forward to it. Yeah, exactly. Once competitions kind of roll around, I might actually have them on the shelf there behind me.
Right.
I think they're the red pair just over there somewhere, right there.
Yeah.
I think that's them. Waiting in line to be brought out to slaughter. Yeah, yeah.
Right. Jeez, I would have thought you'd been so curious you'd have them on straight away and test them out.
I suppose I'm kind of waiting. I don't want to use them when I'm not maybe in peak kind of speed. Like at the moment, we're coming into a speed block. Mm. So once I'm actually feeling fast and speedy, that's when I'm going to reap the benefit from a pair of shoes. But
have they given you any idea as to what kind of increase you could expect, or does it depend on different things?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I haven't seen the literature on it as such.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So look, you get plagued with this question now, in that the fastest, you are that rare breed that every other athlete would swap with, in that you ran your very best time in an Olympic final. This is like the dream. 47.97 seconds in an Olympic final. You finish fourth. You are within a hair's breadth of an Olympic medal. Have you accommodated that? Is that a source of disappointment or just great pride now? Or do you think about that bronze from time to time? Where are you on that 4 and a bit years later?
Do you know what? It's funny. We were only watching the film. I can't remember what the name of the film was. It was about an American or Canadian. Was it an ice skater? No, a downhill skier. And she was.
Molly's Game.
Yes, that's the very one.
Are you going to open a card game? Is that that's where this goes?
No, I'm not going to get involved in illegal gambling.
Okay.
But in the credits was. They say that one of the worst things that can happen to you as an athlete is to finish fourth in the Olympic Games. And I was kind of like, that's just not completely true for me anyway, because I was the complete opposite. Like, I suppose some people might look at it as if they were aiming for a medal and they fall just short in fourth place, they'd probably nearly be better off to have finished, you know, way down the medals, knowing that they weren't that close. Whereas I couldn't have gotten much closer. I was 0.05 of a second, which is what, like that much. Like it was a photo finish, really. So, but I suppose where I was coming from, I was coming off the back of injury. It was my first Olympics. I didn't expect to get that close. But even if I was getting that close, fourth is certainly better than fifth, I would think. So I think outside the medals, fourth is surely the better place to finish, because you're closer up there.
Yeah, 100%.
I suppose I've always kind of brought my best to a championships. That's what I peak for. That's what I race for every season, is that major championships, whether it's Europeans, World Championships or Olympics. I always my training program is built towards that. My mentality is built towards the championships. The races leading into the championships are almost stepping stones to a championships, you know, that kind of way.
Mm.
That final is my, you know, that's a big, that's my goal every year.
And have you got close to 47.97 since?
I've gotten down to low 48s. Yeah, okay. 48s. So I think in my final in Berlin, where I won the bronze in Europe, in the Europeans, I was 48.3 or something like that. And that was my second or third fastest time of my life. And again, it was in a championships final.
Mm. Interesting.
So that's where a lot of my fastest times have come from a championships final.
Do you think there'll be slower times without the massive crowds and all the adrenaline that go with it at this games?
It's hard to know because everybody, I suppose, is a little bit different in that some people might prefer not to have the crowds because there's that little bit less pressure. Whereas some people are going to thrive off of that. I like having a crowd. I like having that noise. It is going to be weird not having it. But I also get just as much of a buzz off of reading all the stuff on social media from home and all the messages that come through to my phone. I get a massive, massive buzz off of that just to see the support because, in Rio, because I wasn't expected to do well, I kind of came out of the woodwork. It was this big shock. So there was big screens being set up. People were, taking a break from work just to watch the race, which I thought was really, really cool. And I get a great buzz off of that. So as long as that goes ahead, I should be fine.
Hey, listen, don't worry. There's not a bandwagon we will not jump on.
I am welcoming everybody on the wagon. Jump aboard.
Listen, good to check in. So is it full on now? Are you busy? Are there lots of race meetings and all that stuff? Or what's the schedule like between now and Olympic time?
Yeah, it's going to be pretty busy now from about May onwards. I haven't had much confirmed races yet, but they will start coming in the next week or two. Obviously, with the way things are at the moment, everything is very fluid. But yeah, the schedule should be pretty busy between now and Olympics with all things going right.
Great. Well, listen, touch wood and all that. Very best of luck. Yeah. Let's check in at some stage before the games and hopefully after when you've got something around your neck as well. Maybe, who knows? Thomas Barr, thanks so much, man. Good to talk to you.
Thanks a million, Joe. Appreciate it.